Hello, all. Welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report for this May 8th, 2025. I have your host, James J. Mailoff here, and we're welcome to the WFHR studio, our great friend, Jennifer McNelly, groundwater educator with the UW Extension. Jennifer, good to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, James.
Always appreciate talking with you. You, like so many of your colleagues over there at UW, I learn whenever we talk to you. Our listeners learn about it. And granted, everybody we talk to has very key important topics. I don't know if anybody has a topic that I can say confidently literally affects everybody out there like the ones that we're going to get into. Yeah. We have gotten into with you before, talking
Absolutely.
About groundwater, and we're going to focus on PFAS today, is that right?
Yeah, we are. So it is actually National Drinking Water Awareness Week. Mm-hmm. So May 4th through the 10th is that national kind of celebration of all things drinking water and the importance of it. And so I thought we would kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about what we call an emerging contaminant. So it is a contaminant that's kind of newer to us that we're learning more about, but has certainly made a splash in the headlines. And that's PFAS. So I'm sure most folks out there have probably heard about it in one shape or another, whether it's a town like Marinette and Peshtigo or even closer to home up in Wausau that have struggled with PFAS contamination, or, you know, people a lot of times will hear it but have no idea what it is or whether they should be concerned about it.
First off, the splash line was great. I'm not going to skate past that. That was a really good line right there. We've been talking about this topic. So I've been doing this particular show or some version of it for going on almost 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And this is a topic that we've been talking about for quite some time.
Yeah.
And I like to ask this, not so much, hopefully not putting anybody on the spot,
no,
but more so for the audience and the people that have been around for this topic since the beginning. Are we seeing improvements? Are we making headway with this topic, with PFAS?
That's a good question. I think, you know, we started talking about it, you know, in the grand scheme of things about 10 years ago. Unfortunately, I think we're learning more and more about it. And so as we learn more about it, yes and no. We're finding more areas of contamination, which oftentimes doesn't feel like we're making headway. Mm-hmm. But we're also really breaking down on what the heck can we do about this and how can we treat it. And so in that respect, we are making headway. So both a yes and a no kind of question, I think.
And I think that's completely understandable. I know that, you know, we said 10 years, and that can seem like a lot of decade and everything. For one, almost nothing is it really, especially when you look at the scheme of things in time. But especially when we're talking about something that, look at the damage that was done for the decades and decades and decades that it was going on.
Yeah.
We can't expect things to just happen overnight with something like this. And I bring it up for some of that, and also to remind everybody to give some grace with this, with each other, with society, also understanding the patience that this is needed to see this through. Because there is an end game here. There is a light at the end of the tunnel with this. Yeah. We just got to be patient to get there.
Exactly. And I think most people don't recognize, too, how long we've been using these products.
Yeah.
So PFAS really came about in the late 1930s. It was when they were discovered and developed, because they're a man-made chemical. And so the first one that we really saw kind of gain popularity was Teflon in like 1938. And so that really took off in the 1950s. And I mean, if you think about how long we've been using that without really understanding the impacts, that's a long time, all things considered. And the other thing is, I also don't think people realize just how universal PFAS are. So PFAS stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. It's a group of thousands of man-made chemicals. Yeah. So when we talk about PFAS, it is not like, you know, where nitrate is one specific contaminant. PFAS includes thousands, which also makes it a little bit tougher to deal with. So huge, huge family of products that are used in just about everything. What makes them really cool, and the reason that they were discovered, is because they are grease proof. You know, they can be used for grease proof.
Mm-hmm.
So think like nonstick cookware, waterproofing. So like Gore-Tex and raincoats and waterproof clothing. That's a big one. And then anti-flammable. So, and that's why they're used in the firefighting foams that most people are familiar with. So anything that has a fireproof coating on it. I mean, everything from our fast food wrappers to cosmetics, clothing, carpet, all of it contains PFAS.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are absolutely everywhere,
yeah.
Which also makes them really hard to deal with and talk about.
So where do we go next with this one then? Where would you like to go next with this one?
Sure. So we talked a little bit about what the heck they are.
Yeah.
The other thing that people, I think, know about PFAS is that they're called a forever chemical. Yeah. So mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Yeah.
So when PFAS were created, they're created with a carbon fluorine bond in their chemical structure, and that is the strongest known chemical bond that we know of.
Right.
And so we can't break it, which is why they don't break down.
Made it too good.
Yeah, exactly. We did a really good job.
Yeah, really good job.
So they don't break down in nature. They stick around. Which is one of the reasons why we talk about them is because they're not easy to deal with in that respect or to get rid of. A lot of other contaminants have like a half-life or they break down into other products that make them a little bit easier to handle. Not the case with this one. And so that's why I think they get a lot of press is because they hang around. The other kind of not so great aspect of this is they also bioaccumulate in nature. And so, you know, if you have like a little minnow who ingests PFAS, eaten by a bigger fish, that's eaten by a human, you know, it works its way up the food chain. Mm-hmm. And that PFAS doesn't necessarily exit the system. It just accumulates and more accumulates in the system, which makes it a challenge as well.
Which so. On one hand is really fascinating,
right?
You know, really, really interesting, and at the same time makes it darn near really impossible to recycle completely or something like that.
Exactly, and so I don't think. Well, at least for me, it was a little eye-opening when I discovered that, you know, I hear about in my work all the time, like PFAS in drinking water and the water quality standards. But actually, some of the first kind of warnings that came out were in fish consumption advisories for folks and the PFAS related to those because of, you know, of how they bioaccumulate in the system. So similar to, like, I think most people are probably familiar to, like, mercury and fish consumption advisories. PFAS are the same thing. And so that was one of the first advisories that actually came out was for that purpose. So
and you know, the more data, the more we're finding out, where not only where these things are showing up, but what we can do about them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, people always ask, well, should I be testing for PFAS? And that's a hard question. That's not an easy one. Typically, I'm going to be the first person to tell you, you should absolutely get your water tested.
Yes.
But for PFAS, that one's tricky. And to be completely honest with you, for most of us, myself included, testing your water for PFAS is cost prohibitive at this point. It costs about $300 for a single sample to have it tested for PFAS. And that's only for a specific subset of those like thousands of chemicals.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So really crazy expensive. There are only a couple labs in the state of Wisconsin that are certified to test for them, which makes it harder to get to a sample to the laboratory. And then the other thing is this is a sample that's not always easy to collect. Because there's really strict sampling protocols for it because PFAS shed. If you have clothing that has PFAS in it or, you know, you're in an environment that has PFAS, the plastic sampling bottles have to be PFAS free. So there's like all of this crazy stuff that goes into collecting that sample. So for most people, I tell them at this point, probably not something that you're going to be testing for. For most people, the best thing to do is almost all of the local like water utilities, a lot of them have tested for PFAS voluntarily through the state. So check your closest water utility. That's going to be a great like indicator of whether this might be an issue that you should be concerned about. The other one, a couple years ago, the DNR had done statewide sampling of private wells across the entire state. And so they were spaced kind of equally apart across the entire state. So those results are another great place to check and see, is there an issue close to me? If you're in a place where you know there is PFAS contamination, at that point, then it might be something to consider. But unless it's showing up, probably hold off. I think we may see that change in the future. I think we may see that cost come down. and then become more accessible.
One of the things I've been trying to, and I'll be honest, I haven't probably brought this up in a little while. I've been a little more bringing up childcare and some of those things. But whenever I have one of our representatives in or anything, I tend to bring these conversations. These tend to be off-air conversations, but yeah. Asking, you know, what about you and your colleagues coming together and getting a grant program built, or, you know, even having more of our government. You know, I don't like to put things on the government because I want them to do the job that they already got. Right. But this, what we have a government for is certain things and outliers. And this is one where maybe we didn't see it coming, but here we are. And this is too expensive for an everyday household. Having something available like that, like a grant, a scholarship, whatever the case may be, whatever they want to do, if they want to take care of it themselves, whatever it is. This isn't an isolated problem. This No. isn't just happening to one household or one neighborhood or even one city. This is our whole state. Yeah. And it's not even just our state because, again, water is connecting everywhere.
Right, exactly.
So, and I say all this in part because of, as well, where I wanted to go with you next and eventually get to at least, as far as, okay, we're telling people what's going on. What can we do about it?
Yeah.
I think that one of the things that can be done is, if more and more people are helping, and I mean not just here in central Wisconsin, I mean around the world, mm-hmm. and even just focusing here on the states and in the mm-hmm. U.S., the more and more of us doing this is how we defeat this.
Yeah.
We can do all the good we want to do in our isolated area, but again, all this water's connected and all of our land's connected.
Yeah.
And so we got to work together on this one. And thus, you know, presenting you with this, Jen, of like, well, where do we go from here?
Yeah. So that's a really good point, too, is all of us working together. And I think the more that we talk about it, too, it's another one of those things.
Yes.
The more conversations that we have about it, the more aware people are becoming. And so we're starting to see that already. We're starting to see products that were made with PFAS. Those are starting to be phased out. In a lot of cases. So cookware is a great example of one where we've seen a lot of movement towards cookware that doesn't have PFAS in it. So read your labels and look for those products in them and see if your products contain PFAS and choose ones that don't. Like, that's a great personal choice that you can usually do mm-hmm. somewhat easily. So that's a great place to start. And, you know, consumer decisions drive a lot of different things.
We've seen that a lot in society.
Exactly. Continuing to have those conversations with your local elected officials and telling them just how important this issue is or that you have concerns about it, I think is another one. And I think we have seen movement in that direction. You know, the state actually right now has a special advisory council on PFAS. They have an action plan in place for communities who you know, discover that they have this issue. And those things really came about because of public pushback on this, saying, look, we got to do something.
Nobody tell them I gave them credit for this because we'll never hear the end of it. No, I'm kidding. But the first person I actually talked about with PFAS on the air here was Representative Krug.
Yeah.
And this is something that Scott's cared about for a very long time and
yeah.
something he's been on. And so I think he's a great example of more than not, your local representative has probably already been on this topic or has a file about this. Reminding them that this is important to you is, again, how we get things done. They can only do what their constituents tell them. You know, it's their job. So we got to let them know, hey, this is still important to us. And I think, you know, not getting numb to this topic.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of things, I know that it can seem so big and so impossible to, like, well, how could we ever figure this out? There was a point in time where there was no convincing certain people you're never going to get everybody to recycle. There's no way. There's no way you're going to get everybody to recycle. There's no way you're going to get everybody to wear a seatbelt. There's a lot of things in society that they said we couldn't do and human beings did. They said we'd never get to the moon. There's plenty of stuff that we've accomplished, and we can accomplish this. We can get our water to that much cleaner. Just got to be patient, give each other some understanding and sharing of information.
Yeah,
absolutely. More times than not, I've known this. I don't need a survey to tell me this. I've experienced it in my own life. The more times than not, the people that are afraid of something or numb to something, it's because they're not informed. They just don't have the information. And even that is somewhat understandable. There's a lot out there. It's a lot to know what to take in sometimes. Sharing of this information, sharing conversations like Jen and I have had here are part of how we put a dent in something. Something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more you know, the more you can kind of understand, and it becomes a little bit more manageable, especially on how to deal with it or how to tackle that issue. And so, yeah, there's lots of resources that are available for folks too. DNR is a great one. Yes. Even if you just Google PFAS in Wisconsin, you're going to come up with a whole list. Mm-hmm. DNR has got the, like I said, that state action plan as well as contacts. They have a great map actually that's a like an interactive mm-hmm. mapping tool that shows where communities have tested for PFAS and those results, and then also like where they have the fish consumption advisories and stuff. So a very simple user-friendly tool that really lets you see across the entire state.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, state what that looks like. UW Extension actually just put out an informational webpage on PFAS. It's called a story map. They link to the same DNR web mapping tool, but they also have stories on there from communities and people that have been affected, which I think is a really interesting take on that. So you can just Google UW Extension and PFAS. That'll come up. Extension is also blessed. We have an emerging contaminant specialist over in the eastern part of the state who covers the entire state. She is a fantastic resource on PFAS. Her name is AJ Janinga. So, you know, we've got lots and lots of resources. And then the Department of Health is another one that's a really great resource out there if people want to know more.
All great resources. Encourage you to check those out. And Jen's not kidding. I actually used that, what you were referencing, the UW Extension, all that. I was using a lot of that for notes for this interview and everything. It's a great website. And you can find out more going to that. And Jen, if people do have follow-up questions, they'd like to know more, how can they reach you specifically?
Sure. So you can reach me at our phone number for Extension in Wood County at 715-421-8440. Or you can just Google the Wood County Extension website, and all of the staff are listed on there, including myself.
Thank you, as always, for the great conversation and all the information, but especially thank you and to everybody working so hard on this topic and not letting it go and keeping at it. We appreciate that very much.
Absolutely.
Good to talk to you, Jen.
Thanks, James.
We'll have more Rapids Report coming up for you right here exclusively at WFHR.com.